All right, KX93.5, I'm Tyler Russell. Good morning. And on Saturday, as you are well aware, we have our concert KXmas featuring Eric Burdon and the Animals here in Laguna Beach at Irvine Bowl. And we are so excited. And I can't even believe that on the phone right now is the legend himself, Eric Burdon. Good morning, man. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
I don't even know where to start with you, man. I'm nervous. I'm excited. I'm starstruck. You're a legend, and it's just a privilege to have you.
Well, nervous is good, you know. I mean, it just means you're alive.
Do you still get nervous before gigs?
No, I get nervous like a week before departing for a show.
Yeah.
You know, what am I taking with me? What do I need? What have I forgotten? That kind of thing. You know, packing is the nervous thing.
Well,
it's gotten worse over the years. It doesn't get any better.
Well, we've spoken with your better half, Mariana, many times over the past couple of weeks, and she seems to have it all pretty organized for you.
Yes, she does. But even her genie, I somehow will fail on certain levels, and you know, it's only human. We go, oh no, I left my reading glasses. Damn it, you know. it's amazing.
Probably things you didn't think about in 1965.
Yeah, you've got to attack it like, you know, make a list and a couple of days before and lay things out on the floor, make sure you got everything. Yeah, it's crazy. You know?
Well,
but, no, I don't get nervous when I hit the stage. In fact, it's kind of like a relief. You know, everything, all the nervousness just like blows itself out.
And yeah. Then,
you know, because you're there. You've covered the most important thing. You've arrived.
Yeah. Would you have a guess, like even a rough number of how many shows you think you've done in your lifetime?
No.
I mean, like, is it tens of thousands, maybe?
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know where to be. I mean, you just running that question by me, I kind of think, all right, I could possibly compile it by starting out in England with the original band and when we all traveled together with our equipment, with road management in a dormobile, we used to call them, you know, a panel truck. That would be a place to start.
Yeah, it would take a while to count.
Yeah, it would be a computer that would take some time now. But it's a lot.
Well, back then, I mean, you were friends with and hung out with everybody, and I think it's so cool. I mean, a lot of these people haven't survived. You know, Jimi Hendrix, John Lennon, and you're still doing it. Is it kind of bittersweet that you're still touring, but some of your best friends from that time aren't and were taken way too young?
Well, it's like best not think about it.
Yeah.
Narrow it down to the people that you were somewhat friendly with, you know, and I say somewhat friendly with because the very nature of the business of touring, you know, it's like I could say I've been everywhere for one day, and I've met everybody for one night or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, I hung out a lot with Jimmy and with Hendrix because he was in London and I was there. I was in London the very night that he arrived from the U.S. for the first time. And unfortunately, I was there the night that he tragically passed away. And I got involved in that in the worst kind of way. When you're close to somebody who goes, all questions arise. Stories start flying around, finger pointing, accusations. It's, you know, it's really complex. I got mixed up in that. And those others that really messed with my head when you realize that they're gone. But most recently, I'm learning to deal with it. You have to.
Yeah.
No, that's crazy world.
Do you think has there been anybody even close to his caliber since Jimmy? Have you noticed anybody else over the years that you think is as good or as prolific as he was?
Yeah. I'll have to take some time to think about it. But, you know, Hendrix was like a rocket ship that he pulled people along in his wake, and people saw in him what they wanted to see. There was the real Hendrix, and there was the mythological Hendrix. I mean, that everybody thought that he was a soldier in Vietnam, for instance. You know, they thought that was a perfect thing for Jimmy to live up to, but actually he didn't. You know, he was in the 101st Airborne for a while, but not very long.
Yeah, you're right. He is kind of a myth, isn't he?
Yeah. The mythology has its own thunder and its own, you know, people create their own. Feelings, but like everybody thinks that I live in San Francisco.
Well, yeah, you've got a couple songs about it.
well, it was a movement, you know. It wasn't just the place. It was a movement that I was very happy to be a part of and see it bloom. I mean, when I first arrived in San Francisco, and I have to say it was with Chuck Berry, got off the plane with my guys in the band, and we were in the company of Chuck Berry. And we walked through the airport, and it was like any other American airport, you know. Then a few months later, I did the same walk through the same airport, and everything had changed. There was color everywhere, and the dress styles of the people were totally different. It was amazing. What happened here?
Yeah. Well, you were a part of that change.
Yeah, I was. And I preferred to live down the road in Southern California and, you know, rent a Cadillac for the weekend and get some friends together and drive up to San Francisco. And on the way up, I remember one time, when I left England, Jimmy was in the studio laying down the bed tracks for Hey Joe. And when I got to San Francisco, one time I was with a friend in a VW Bug, and with a tiny little 4-inch speaker in the dashboard, and we heard Hendrix, you know, going, "Hey Joe, where you going?" And I was like, wow, he made it, you know. And I just knew then that he was going to be the biggest thing since bottled milk, you know. It's incredible.
Were there any other bands that you were friends with then that you were surprised became successful, that maybe you thought, you know, these guys kind of suck, but then they made it, you know?
Yeah, more than one. I mean, but, you know, I'll tell you one thing about those days in San Francisco was I would collect albums, American albums, records, which I have been doing since much earlier, since I was a kid. And I would take them back to England. And then the English thing happened, and I took the first one of the first singles from the Beatles, and I was invited to a party at the Grateful Dead's place in San Francisco. And I remember them gathering around a record player, and I played them a Beatles B-side. I think it was a George Harrison song, and they thought it was the most psychedelic thing they'd ever heard.
Hmm.
the Beatles.
Yeah.
And they looked upon it as like, that was really, well, it's really far out. So I, on the return trip, I took Frank Zappa's, at the time, his album, and it was called Freak Out, I think. And I played that to the Beatles, and they were like, well, man, this is really incredible. And we're like, well, he's coming to town, you know, he's going to be playing at the Royal Albert Hall. Oh, we got to see that, you know. So I was happy to say that I was instrumental in delivering the word to a couple of folks on both sides of the Atlantic.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, that was the only way music got around, right? Was word of mouth and spread, and an influencer like you literally flying across the world to spread it.
Yeah, and we didn't have the technology that we have today.
Right.
I mean, if you want, if you wanted a friend to listen to something, you had to say, "I'm giving you this album. You can borrow it until you listen to this track. You know, don't scratch it. You know." And don't mess the cover up and give it back to me in a week. You know, it's a different world.
Yeah. And what? Go ahead.
Yeah, go on.
Well, I was going to say, what about your relationship with the Beatles? I know you were friends with John, and you very famously were nicknamed the Eggman in I Am the Walrus. Just unbelievable. When I heard that, I couldn't even believe that story.
In the States, a different thing in London. We were all moving in and out of each other's zones. I made great friends with George Harrison, who I love George Harrison a lot. I mean, he was such a great gentleman and a great musician. And the great thing was is that during the Beatles' heyday, George was always pushed to the back. You know, he was just the guy that played the guitar. And sometimes they brought in other guitar players, like Eric Clapton was brought in on sessions because they thought George wasn't good enough, you know. But then when things fell apart and the band parted and the Beatles story was over, George Harrison was the guy that stepped up to the plate and did the first international peace festival, which was the Bangladesh thing. And then he had like two number one hits himself. And I was like, yeah, go, little Georgie, go. You know? It was amazing. But he was available. He was transparent. He was always there to give me advice and things. And we hung out together on a lot of occasions. But then I got to Beverly Hills years later. This must have been 1968, 69. And I was living in Beverly Hills, and just down the road was John and his new wife, you know. And they left a book on my doorstep, and they wrote in an introduction on the pages. I heard them. I heard somebody at the door. I ran down the stairs, and it was a big house we were in. By the time I got downstairs, I saw the car's lights disappearing into the night, and I saw this book on the floor. I picked it up, and then the inscription was, "Dear Eric, becoming an American will not ease the pain. Love from Yoko and John." You know,
wow.
And I really, I never forgot that. John was, you know. People are now calling him a genius. And I often always felt that word genius was thrown around too often and in too many different places and really didn't warrant the name. Genius? I mean, come on. He was just, you know, he was just a rock and roll guy, you know, like all of us, you know, but genius? But then after his death, and I saw the genius and the magic. The magic is a better word. The magic of the Beatles. And on occasion, like, for instance, when they went worldwide live and sang All You Need Is Love, you know, and you realize that, hey, the whole planet was tuned in to this event. and the whole planet was singing All You Need Is Love, you know. And it's true, you know. It's more true today than it's ever been.
More true than ever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know, amazing. I mean, they were great times to grow up in and, you know, be around a genius. My genius was being in the right place at the right time. And then, of course, the dark side of being in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know.
Well, it's been well documented over the years. Again, Eric Burdon of Eric Burdon and the Animals on the phone with us this morning, who's performing at our concert, KXmas, on Saturday night here in Laguna Beach. Let's transition to the present, since we've talked a lot about, you know, 50 years ago. Have you ever played in Laguna before that you know of?
Once, I think.
Once? Cool.
So, yeah.
Pretty rare opportunity.
I think it was a beach gig, I think. But I have memories of Irvine because when I first came to California, it was just an open landmass, you know, mm-hmm. of the Irvine. I've forgotten the name that was given to the ranch there, but I would do off the road motorcycle rides with friends of mine, and we would ride all over those hills in Irvine. It was fantastic.
Yeah,
there was rides there, and there was rides in the desert. That was like something that I couldn't get in Europe anywhere. You know, I had a great time, and I had friends down there in Laguna, and I'm sure that I'm not sure. I don't know if they're still around. I'll find out.
Yeah, you'll find out on Saturday if they show up at the show. Now it's all just manicured houses in Irvine. I don't think you could ride your dirt bike through there anymore.
No, I know. Yeah, it's all gone.
I should mention, I don't know if this has been told to you or not, but the fellow we got to open for you on Saturday is Joaquim Cooter, who's Rye Cooter's son. And Rye's going to stop by the show and hop on a couple songs with Joaquim. I just found that out yesterday.
I'm looking forward to that.
So that should be really cool.
Right.
Yeah, and we're a small independent nonprofit radio station. You're helping us raise money for ourselves and for a local homeless shelter and for the local chamber. And Laguna doesn't see talent like you very often, as artistic of a community that it is. So this is a really special thing for our town, and everybody's really, really excited for you.
Well, I'm excited too.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it. Should be great. Been a fan of Rye and his work for years, and the event that he conjured up from Cuba, the recording and it was just an incredible event, and I'm looking forward to meeting the man. But he has done some incredible comments and recording history in a way with his music, with the border, you know, the border, that the problems of the border that we have and the romance that we've always had with Mexico, you know, and now it's they're gonna put a wall over it.
Right.
It's a very strange time being. In the world.
Speaking of which, are you still writing? Does any of this inspire you to continue releasing records?
Yeah, I'm in the throes and have been for 3 years now, working on a book, and it's gotten to be such a stretch that I read parts of it, the early parts of it, and I realize it's dated now, and I have to rewrite it. So. Yeah, and I'm hoping that songs will emerge out of those writings that I'm doing. And if I do ever complete it, which it should be soon, I'll be going to the studio to do a spoken word version.
Oh, wow.
That's the way I listen to books these days. If I want to get a book quick, you know, instead of taking hours and days of reading, I put my headphones on and go online and listen to it, you know. And
yeah.
And if I really am enthralled with a book, I buy the book as well, you know. And I buy the video, the book. And it's a costly thing, but, you know, it gets there. I mean, the latest example is very little to do with music, but John le Carré, the great spy novelist, his work has become being recognized now as, like, he's the laureate of the United Kingdom's writers, you know, and the movies that they've made out of his books. So you see the movie, you read the book, and, you know, you listen to the book, and then you think, hey, this is so important, I have to have the printed word. So you buy the hardback cover, you know. It's an expensive way to go, but, you know, everything's expensive these days if you want it.
Well, I would love to hear an audiobook narrated by you. You're an excellent orator, as indicated not only by this, but I saw you at Caboo Festival in San Diego, and you spend a lot of time telling stories on stage, and I hope people know that and come to see that, because I think that's one of the best parts of your show.
You know, I'm still delving into that.
Yeah.
But when you begin to just speak, at the back of you, there's a band standing there, and, you know, and they're waiting, they're ready to go. And I kind of think, you know, am I boring people or what? This is a dangerous area to get into for someone like me that I'm not used to doing it. But
take it from me, your very small sample size, if you're trusting me, it's great. It really made it for me.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Look forward to a boring gig.
Well, if you enjoyed this interview, then you probably will enjoy Eric talking on stage. Again, that's Saturday, KXmas, with Eric Bird and the Animals. Also, Joaquim and Rye Cooter are going to play on stage as well. And I should mention, we have a couple guys in town who are homeless, who are musicians, who are some of the gentlemen that were benefiting from the charity show. And they're actually going to take the stage first and play a couple songs together. So that's pretty special and cool, too. Yeah.
Great.
So,
sounds fantastic.
It's a great night.
That's a good thing to be doing.
Well,
thank you for doing that.
Yeah, and thank you, Eric. We like I said at the beginning of this, I'm absolutely flabbergasted that you're coming down and that it's real and that it's really happening on Saturday and people can still get tickets. We also have a meet and greet option to hang out with Eric a little bit before the show and take a photo, and you can find all those tickets online at kx935.com/KXmas. I know there's multitudes of life to talk about, Eric, but is there anything else you wanted to add this morning before we go?
Not really. I just listened to what you're saying and I'm like, wow, you know, thank you. This is shaping up to be a memorable event, you know. I mean, usually I just go to a place, I do the gig, I leave and forget about it.
Yeah.
Or I write about it. And this certainly sounds like it's worth putting time in, putting pen to paper, and including it in what I'm writing about, you know.
Well, that would be something cool, yeah.
Yeah, and this could be the last show of the year for me.
Right.
You know, where I'm not traveling as much as I used to, and this I'm looking forward to working in Southern California. I always do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
wonderful place to be.
Yeah, and you've been here for a long time, and you're a staple around here, so we're really glad to bring you to Laguna. So, Eric Burden, this Saturday here in Laguna Beach, KX935.com. And Eric, thank you so much for taking so much time for us this morning. It's really, really been a treat.
Thank you, and thanks to all of my fans for the support over the years. And I just hope and pray that continues for a while.